大家看，我们这另外一个什么？那你最近送过过来是？你看，现在你的家，那这个继续和伢郎的过大每年把这个另外一个什么节假日必须当个文章，你也不马上把伊那，那另外一个呢，那就学会那，你先来呀，俺刚刚这样，当你让来就明白吧，先给的是，那最近要我送另外一个什么？出来要我送伊那？
啊，那个先来呀，自己原来当然了呀，自己原来呀，彻底给什么单位呢？最起码呢，那这个来当美国往投呀当，俺叔叔来自己用过来是。那这样工作，将就身边的什么都身边，他们这个都是上学过往头发，几个人上将学会的怕的那些，您敌人咋？俺给敌人另外一个什么有可能？这个先来那边加我的，这个没什么大用的，俺那的俺那将就身边过年了，吃完这俺那。
Good morning. So last night we looked at ethical conduct, and we spoke about the need to guard our ethical conduct very well. And this is because throughout the day we engaged in physical activities, verbal activities, and of course our mental activities. And if we don't guard our activities of our body, speech, and mind well, then we will end up not only causing problems for ourselves, but we will harm others. However, conversely, if we do guard our ethical conduct well, then we will treat others in a positive way, in a virtuous way, and we'll have good relationships with others. And in this way, we'll benefit others, and we will be happy ourselves. And moreover, we create the causes for future happiness. So not only will we experience happiness in this life through guarding our ethical conduct well, but we will attain good rebirths and have good conditions in our future rebirths. And then we also spoke last night about how we should combine this guarding of our ethical conduct with our meditation on bodhicitta. So in the morning, when we establish our motivation for the day, and we should do this in accordance with the motivation of bodhicitta, generating the mind of bodhicitta as has been discussed previously, we should then also make the commitment that today I will not harm others. I will not harm them through any activity, physical activity I do, or anything I say, and I will guard my mind from also going in a critical or disparaging or any kind of negative direction. And in this way, we will establish a motivation that will ensure that all our resulting activities are causes for the attainment of enlightenment. Now we'll continue with the next verse, and this is now about the practice of generosity. So we'll look at the practice of generosity itself within the context of this verse. Read now the sixth verse, which starts, possessions are ephemeral and essenceless.2 weeks ago, we looked at the fourth verse, and the fourth verse mentioned the six recollections. And so last night we looked at one of them, and now we come to a second one, and this one is that of generosity. So generosity, the first thing we need to do in the context of generosity is come to know what the benefits are of generosity. And it's through coming to know the benefits and then reflecting on those benefits repeatedly that one will give rise to an aspiration to achieve those benefits. And giving rise to such an aspiration, one's mind will also be positive towards the practice of generosity. So therefore, one will be cultivating a motivation that is strong and stable in terms of engaging in the practice of generosity. So this will come about, first of all, through coming to know what the benefits of the practice are, and then cultivating or meditating repeatedly on this practice so as to give rise to a sincere and heartfelt wish to engage in this practice. Garyola
Dini di longjue di ye garas ne yana kuma shoye ge nyanga yora yana go ane gele gele thoru gures jena dini mida bare gyoru gures yana vide sayum jawa da dini gi me thikwa la so chana me wa charu go ne jena dini me wa cha wa ne so so le bije ta me ba mi jen le ro ba chen ba so ba che dini chala du go ro was dini da dini gi tembu yo mares dini gi da geti ne da Dimboyoma, Ningboyoma, Resamje, two some dajas. That's also the Yudi Kabla, the Kohop Yudi Kabla, Shenya, Robert, and Pembertu, Jigin Samje, and the Shiwore, such a.
The first line here is sort of put it a little differently. So come to know that possessions are ephemeral and is essenceless. So this, the Buddha taught this with the understanding that his students would come to know that possessions themselves are ephemeral and essenceless. The reason for this is so as to overcome the mind of miserliness that we have towards the possessions that we have. So the Buddha encouraged his students to practice generosity with the possessions that they have. And so the meaning of this is that in accordance with their own individual circumstances, generosity should be practiced. So one should, in terms of what one does give, one does offer to others, there isn't a set amount, but rather it's in accordance with what one has. And however, that if one has a lot or one has a little, one still can have this mind of miserliness. So to overcome this, the Buddha spoke about the nature of the of our possessions. So here we have two terms, that the possessions should be seen as ephemeral and essenceless. So this means that we should, this was taught by the Buddha so as to overcome this mind of miserliness. So we should come to see that our possessions are not stable, they are not lasting. Rather, in their nature, they are changing moment by moment by moment. They are impermanent. So they naturally go to waste. So this mind of miserliness that grasps at them and wants them to last and always to have and possess them, thinking that they'll bring us some kind of lasting happiness, this is mistaken, because in the very nature of these possessions, they change momentarily. So the Buddha taught this so we could overcome this mind of miserliness and rather utilize whatever resources we have to be of benefit to others and practice generosity whenever the opportunity comes. So that is the meaning here of this first line. So the Buddha here is teaching that phenomena are in their nature and ephemeral and essenceless. So this understanding comes. We should recall our understanding of emptiness to understand the meaning of what the Buddha is saying here. So the Buddha is teaching that all our possessions, they are not truly existent. They may appear to us as existing in a particular way. They may appear to us as having qualities which are in their very nature. But this is not how any phenomena exist at all. In fact, there is no cause at all for any phenomena to exist inherently or for it to have any essence whatsoever. So this relates to our possessions, and it also relates to the owner of the possessions, so to the self. So that both the self and the owner of the possessions should be seen as being transient, as being ephemeral, as not having any essence at all, and there being no cause that can come about whereby something may have an essence or be inherently existent. So here we should combine our understanding of emptiness with what the Buddha is teaching here in the context of the practice of generosity. And the purpose of this, again, is so that we can come to see that these our possessions that we grasp at so and we value in an exaggerated way, that they do not have any essence. They are not stable. They are impermanent. And if we think about this just in a rough level, we can come to understand this. We know that people's valued possessions get lost in fire, they get lost in other natural disasters and the like. We see this in the news in our country and other countries. We know that someone may steal something that we value greatly, or that us as the owner of the possession, we may die before we've had the chance to utilize it fully. So thinking just in a rough way like this, we can come to see that our possessions are not stable, they are not reliable, and that they are impermanent. And if we think in a more detailed level, and we come to look at their essence, and we'll see that that all phenomenal possessions, they do not exist in the way that they appear. They are not truly existent. And that's both the external possessions as well as their owner, the self. So that is the meaning of what the Buddha is teaching here. And he's teaching it so that we can come to understand that we should utilize what we have in abundance to practice generosity so as to create the causes to attain enlightenment for ourselves and for others.
Jadi jadi kumpulan itu gebol sungguh ruah. Ane gebol curang ini ya. Ane curang lah. Ane cikir curang gebol curang lah ya. Ane cikir jual di ni penjual ni yoro ya tak yoro wah. Yoro yang jadi ane ya. Jadi ni ni samdang kuris. Jadi lonceng ni ya. Ane cikir nimbuk kaya ni apa. Jadi curang simpan macam apa. Jadi sih sosuki dah mimal ya. Rohbache mal mache bache sena che de bai na ani kyorong gi gyu di ge ani ningbos ga yo mar mi ta ba yu o du gures ji dan yu wa ja na ni de ni ge ni ge bo kyorong mi ta ba re ani de ba chu ba ma re ani yu o du gures ni ge di na ni mi ji xi ru ru was de ni za an da de kyorong le su bo de bo yu ba da kyorong ya de ni ge ji gyu cha la yu ni ka bla ni xian ya jin ba da da ya ji nyam len ji gu res ni ma che ba che ani Jebaina, Majabaji Sena Jebaina, and the launch of the Sasa, and Nimiji Mitsibada, and the Chulo Deva Mevachasona, and Mille Mavarale Pemme Jonchagores, and the launch of the Nigi Meva Machabana, Sosuga and Shidovana, Jebakura Shidona, launch of the Lire, Kuran Shido, your Maris, Tahir, Kuran Bijuta, your Maris, Kuran Sena Sasa, Penmoto, Mille Maja Penmoto, Kuran Penmoto by Chagres, the name that you're in Jimbiga and Jimbalia.
So here the Nagarjuna is giving advice to the king and he's saying to the king that you as a king not only have great power but you have abundant resources. So think about these resources and think about them in a way that is being presented here, that they are impermanent, they change moment by moment, and therefore they are not stable, they are not reliable. And you can see this in your life. Things that you've had, they very quickly start to deteriorate. They after a while, they are not glorious like they once were before. Then furthermore, not only do things change momentarily, but they have no intrinsic nature, no essence, and therefore they lack true existence. And not only do your valued possessions lack true existence, but so do you, the owner of those possessions. And the reason that I, Nagarjuna, am teaching this to you, or presenting this to you, is so that you can overcome this mind of miserliness that you have to possess your possessions, and rather use them to be of benefit to others. Because this opportunity that you have to be of benefit to others, this too is transient. This too will come to an end. You now have an opportunity as a king to benefit others. So use this opportunity while it lasts. Your death will come, and when your death comes, you will have lost this opportunity to be of benefit to people. Furthermore, those possessions, they will not be able to travel with you to your next life. So again, that opportunity to be of benefit to others will be lost. And now, whilst you are alive and you have these possessions which are impermanent in their nature, they are going to waste. They are degenerating or degrading in every moment. So the opportunity that you have to use these possessions to help others, this too comes to an end. So here there are various things that you, O king, should bear in mind. You yourself are impermanent. Your opportunity here as a king and with all this power and ability to help others, this will come to an end when your life ends. Furthermore, the possessions that you have, these are intransient, they are unstable, and now you can utilize them to help others, but you may store something away and protect it and guard it, but it naturally from its side will change and depreciate. So therefore, utilize what you have now in abundance to be of benefit to others while you can. And moreover, those beings that you want to help and that you have the opportunity to benefit them now, that opportunity will end, and those individual beings too are impermanent. They will also die. So now, whilst you have the opportunity, utilize it well to benefit others. So here Nagarjuna presented the Buddha's teachings in various ways to the king, showing him that he himself is impermanent, as are his possessions, as are his subjects, and the opportunity to benefit others. And Nagarjuna presents this so as to overcome the selfish mind of miserliness. The king here is being advised now to meditate on the nature of these various objects. So on one hand, the one object would be the possessions, and to come to meditate on their nature, to see that they are impermanent, that they are unstable, that they are transient, and that they are essenceless or they lack true existence. And then secondly, in terms of the self, to meditate on that as also being impermanent and lacking true existence, and likewise with this opportunity that he has, this opportunity to be of benefit to others. This too is impermanent, this too is transient and changing moment by moment and lacks any intrinsic nature. So the king is advised to meditate in the same way on these three different objects, and to come to understand that now, whilst he has this opportunity of his life, as well as the opportunity of having these possessions, as well, thirdly, having the opportunity to be able to benefit others. There are people around him that he has contact with that he can help. Whilst these three situations are in place, so to speak, utilize them well. Because when your time of death comes, and it will come, and it will come at a time that is unexpected by you, your opportunity will be completely lost. And all these possessions, if you rather choose to guard them and protect them, you will not be able to take them with you in your to your next rebirth. However, if you wisely utilize your opportunity now, and whatever you have in abundance, utilize this to be of benefit to others, and do so with a good motivation, you will accumulate a tremendous amount of virtue, and the imprint of that virtue, that will travel with you to your future rebirths. And so therefore, you'll be able to take the imprint of your acts of generosity to future lives. You cannot take the possessions, but if you utilize them wisely, you'll be able to take those imprints with you to future lives. And they will ripen in happiness. They will ripen in good resources. They will ripen in good rebirths. So this is a wise way to practice, and this you need to meditate on. So now we come to, for us, the second and third lines. Know this and give them generously to monks, to Brahmins, to the poor, and to your friends. So, generally when practicing generosity, whomever one gives to, this is good. But here we have a presentation of the various objects that one can give to. So then this is divided up into different categories. And that's what we see mentioned here. So the first object, which can be called the superior objects. So those would be the ordained and Brahmins. So here what is being mentioned is by offering to the ordained, so those who are engaging in the cultivation of the minds of the Dharma, then by making offerings to them of the resources that they require so as to be able to cultivate the minds of the Dharma, this is included within the first group of, or the first set of objects. As well in there are Brahmins, who, of course, in ancient India were seen as a, how would you say, like a higher rebirth or a higher caste of people. So here we're in our translation, we have monks. So this should of course just be understood as those who have gone forth. So that would really include all those who have bowed, and the meaning is those who are engaging in actual cultivation of Dharma practice, or cultivation of the minds of the Dharma. And then the meaning of the term Brahmins, if we take it, so this would be a term which had particular meaning in its day. But today we could say anyone who's engaged in virtuous practice. So those who are who have adopted other philosophical views or other religions and are engaged in virtuous practice. So by assisting them in the cultivation of virtue, then this is included within the superior objects.
ᱟᱨᱮ ᱞᱟᱢᱱᱟ ᱫᱮᱫᱤᱥᱚ ᱪᱷᱮ ᱧᱟᱢᱱᱮ ᱡᱮᱛᱤᱜᱮ ᱫᱤᱜᱮᱞᱟ ᱟᱱᱮ ᱡᱤᱜᱮ ᱥᱟᱦᱟᱭ ᱛᱩᱭᱟ ᱫᱟ ᱫᱤᱱᱮ ᱜᱩᱦᱟᱭ ᱫᱤ ᱜᱩᱜᱩᱨᱣᱟ ᱫᱤᱱᱮ ᱪᱷᱩᱭ ᱛᱩᱧᱜᱤᱱ ᱜᱩᱜᱩᱨᱣᱟ ᱪᱷᱩᱭ ᱛᱩᱧᱜᱤᱱ ᱫᱤᱱᱮᱜᱮ ᱯᱷᱤ
So the reason we've got the ordained and Brahmins put together in the first group is because for someone to engage in full-time, wholehearted, sincere Dharma practice, then this requires a lot of time and energy. And moreover, one needs certain conditions, conditions such as food, clothing, etc. Now, of course, anyone can engage in work so as to accumulate the money to be able to purchase these things, but that serves as an obstacle to full-time cultivation of minds of the Dharma. So therefore, if one practices generosity towards them, that obstacle of needing to engage in regular work so as to accrue resources, that is being eliminated. And then they can utilize that opportunity of having more time and less distraction to engage wholeheartedly in the cultivation of the minds of the Dharma. So that's why they are included together here in this first group. The second group then that's mentioned here, we have them as the poor. So the poor would be those who are really in a desperate and a destitute situation, those who are tormented by misfortune and poverty and the like. So there are many beings in such a situation who struggle to feed themselves, who can't afford somewhere safe to live, who are desperate to be away from conflict or violent situations, who struggle to access good medical care or afford good medical care and the like. So there are many beings in this really dire situation, and they are desperate for help. They are desperate for protection from this suffering. So if one is able to offer resources to them, this is extremely good to do, and great benefit comes from this. And this is very easy to contemplate the joy that will come to someone's arise in someone's mind if they know they have someone who's caring for them, someone who's supporting them, someone who's alleviating their terribly desperate situation. So if we are able to help those who are tormented by misfortune and poverty, then this is extremely good to do. So this then would be a second field, and this would be called the field of destitution. Then the third field, maybe the excellent objects, this then is included in the field of benefit. And in our text we have it as to your friends. So this word here that's translated as friends can be translated in many ways. It can be loved ones, it can be relatives, it can be friends, it can be spiritual teachers. So it's all the same word. So here it refers to those who have shown us tremendous kindness, such as our parents who have cared for us when we ourselves were at our most vulnerable and we were completely dependent on them. So here if we are able to repay the kindness to such beings and help them and support them, this too is very good to do. So this term that we have here as friends, so this is, like I said, was quite broad, so it includes spiritual teachers. So whether it's your own spiritual teacher or the Dharma teacher of others, to offer support to such beings is very beneficial, because of if they have the support to be able to continue to guide others in terms of their own mental development and progression from suffering, this is very good to do. So the meaning of this is Nagarjuna is saying to the king that you have the opportunity to directly help others, to be of benefit to others, because around you are people experiencing tremendous problems and difficulties, and they're experiencing a wide variety of difficulties, with the gross, coarse ones that one can perceive directly, as well as the other types of suffering that are more subtle. So around you, all sentient beings are experiencing these sufferings. So you, by helping them, by practicing generosity, will help alleviate their suffering. And there are many ways that you can do this. So we've looked at three different groups here, so to remind ourselves of one. So through helping Dharma practitioners and teachers of the Dharma, you are enabling them to engage in full-time cultivation of the minds of Dharma, helping them spiritually develop so that they in turn can be of greater benefit to others. And by being of greater benefit to others, this would mean that they are able to guide others, to lead others to a state free from suffering, a state that has that's gone beyond all forms of suffering. So by you ensuring that such practitioners have all the resources that they need so that they can engage in their Dharma practice in an undistracted manner, then you are helping alleviate all beings from the subtler forms of suffering.
And ne
And furthermore, then Nagarjuna advised the king to help those who are impoverished, those who are really suffering very coarse but severe problems, because they are desperate for help and they really don't have anywhere else to turn. But you have the power and you have the resources to be able to help others. So this is something that you really ought to engage in. And this advice from Nagarjuna was particularly pertinent at the time, because of course kings had a tremendous amount. They held all the power and most of the resources. But actually, this advice from a word from 2,000 years ago is as relevant today as it was then. Because as in the past, the great and the good of our world today, they will probably be, they are more likely, let's say, to be quite proud and not want to associate with those that they feel can't be of help to them, or they will not gain any prestige from associating with. And we see this in the world in that those with power, those with great wealth, they tend to mix amongst each other. They don't necessarily mix with people who are poor, people who are without influence, are without resources of their own. And so with this mind of pride and only want to mix with people that can add to their prestige and their renown, then they are quite separate from those who are suffering. And they therefore can, that the suffering of others, the coarse suffering, the gross suffering of others, this may be something that is quite hidden to them because they don't interact with a wide range of people. So this advice from Nagarjuna is encouraging the king to transcend this mind of pride and encouraging him to help those who are without protection, to help those who are suffering from destitution, as well as to help those who are cultivating the minds of the Dharma so that they can help to guide people to overcome the subtler forms of suffering. So the advice here from Nagarjuna really is as relevant in the past as it is today, and therefore something that we too need to take to heart. Now we come to, for us, the fourth line here, which isn't so clear. So we have beyond, there is no greater friend than gift. So maybe we can say something else. So here we don't have it in our translation, but here there's a word about the proper manner in which generosity should be practiced. So here now the commentary goes on to how one should practice generosity. So Nagarjuna is advising the king that if you practice generosity towards others in the way that I've advised, then this is very good. They need your help. However, you need to be very aware of your motivation, because if your motivation is to become famous or to have a good reputation and the like, then whilst it's still good to practice generosity, that is a very weak motivation. It's a very poor motivation. It's not the motivation that one should strive to cultivate.
Jimbatai, dita kunwa ditam che dinik zam mado antaba da tamji kimbi sam ma da che jewa chima so so digi go ya de juje la ya go chong na sa da jewa chima so so haba mi go ma thogu du sam kunwa dinik zam ji kunwa la ji jimba da ba ne ndia ne gewa de je de ine gewa la chimbu ga ma des.
And such a motivation of just wanting fame and prestige, this couldn't really even be called a motivation of the Buddha Dharma. The smallest kind of motivation in accordance with the Buddha Dharma would be hoping for a good rebirth in the future, to have good resources in future lives and the like. So that would be a better motivation to have. It's a motivation in accordance with the being of smallest capacity. And so this is a good motivation to have. However, you have the capacity to have a far greater motivation than this. But if that is truly what your motivation is, then you will still accumulate virtue, and that's a suitable motivation to act under. However, you can generate a more powerful motivation than that.
Rangi, Sosan, judgment of Toku, Kuno, the Nikje, Jimbatan, the Sujim, the Niki Jimbatan, why not? And the Sunam de Sagores, Sunam Chimbo Sagores, Kazan Soso Tabar to be you, Chagores, the Ninja, Ina, the Sunam de San Diego want to be you, Chago Mares, Kazan Kuno Dilia, and Janjusim Gune Nayo Marwa, Soso Tarpa Toku, Soso judgment of Toku, Simbi, Gune Laje, the Nicheva, the Nicheva, and
A more powerful motivation would be a motivation thinking that through practicing generosity and helping these beings now, may I attain liberation from all forms of suffering. May I attain liberation from cyclic existence in its entirety and attain the state of nirvana, the state of an arahat or a foe-destroyer. So such a motivation is a very powerful motivation. This is the motivation of a being of middling capacity. So if one generates such a motivation, then the merits that one creates will be those roots of virtue will lead to the attainment of the state of liberation from suffering in its entirety for you, but only for yourself. So this is a good motivation. It's a powerful motivation, but still you have the capacity for a far greater motivation than that. Because that motivation there does not lead to the accruing of causes for enlightenment. And that is because it's separated from the mind of bodhicitta. It's not a motivation in accordance with bodhisattvas. Nevertheless, a motivation of a being of middling capacity is a good motivation and great virtue is accumulated. However, you can generate a more powerful motivation than that. The very best form of motivation that should be generated is a motivation that you have the capacity to generate, and that this is a motivation that comes through thinking about the actual situation of all sentient beings and being aware how they all only want to experience happiness, but yet they keep accumulating causes for suffering. And so by generating a motivation that may all sentient beings be free of suffering, and be free of it not just on a temporary way, but completely free of suffering, as well as then experience happiness, but a lasting happiness. By generating such a wish, one generates one of the aspects of the mind of enlightenment. And then when one takes the responsibility that I will do this, I take responsibility for leading sentient beings to a state where they are free of all forms of suffering, and they experience only moment after moment of lasting happiness, then one is progressing towards the attainment of the mind of bodhicitta. And then one generates a second aspect of this mind, the mind of to be able to be a skilled guide to lead others to enlightenment, I myself need to become a Buddha. Then one has generated the second component of the mind of bodhicitta. And then with such a motivation, then when one practices generosity, then one will accumulate a huge store of virtue. And this virtue, these are the causes for the attainment of enlightenment for yourself and others. So this is the most skillful way to practice generosity. So the practice is the same, but the motivation is vastly different, and therefore the virtue accumulated is incomparably different. And if you generate such a motivation, if you genuinely generate such a motivation, then not only does this result of enlightenment come for yourself and for others, but right now in this life, you will be happy. And moreover, right now in this life, you will be of benefit to others and bring happiness to others. And furthermore, you are creating the causes, through creating the causes for enlightenment, you are also creating the causes for good future rebirths, for rebirths in the happy states, in the realms of gods and humans. So your future lives will also continue to go well due to having this sincere good motivation. And not only that, but the attainment of a state completely freed from suffering, a state completely liberated from suffering, a state comparable to that of a Bodhisattva or an Arhat, that too will be attained. Because when one attains enlightenment and progresses towards the attainment of enlightenment, all these more minor goals, these are achieved along the way. These good rebirths, liberation from suffering, etc., these are achieved as one progresses to the state of enlightenment. So therefore, you're encouraged to generate a genuine motivation of bodhicitta, and with such a motivation, engage in practices of generosity. And what we have here as this word beyond, so this here then refers to the perfections. So this word that is that we have in other contexts translated as perfection can be the word as in beyond, as in gone beyond sorrow, gone beyond samsara. So the meaning of this word beyond here is perfection. So here the king has been encouraged to engage in the practice of the perfection of generosity. So that is what is meant here. And then moreover, the subtler meaning behind that is that the king is being encouraged to engage in the practice of all the perfections.
Then so rang ya ne jibe jik sang ngan de le robo chi wo de ya wo chi zu shen so so go chi go le jin ne che yo de mi xian da le di ji yong ha da so so yin na di ji yong ha de ni ge bo qiu rong da qiu rong gi mi ma cha sang de shu de qun bu yong gu le ji sa ni che de le cha cha ja be ne an di ji ya wo cha ge de qun bu ya wo yong gu le ni jin ba da wi ge che bo de le de yong gu le de ne an ne 세치마섬다웨네 진비 메카소 롱주에 야고 용하다 아니 지겨 치마 디기 야고 용하게 아니 제고 유사고레스
And then the last bit of our fourth line, there's no greater friend than gift. What this then means is that through engaging in the practice of generosity, so helping those who are being tormented by immense or intense impoverishment, as well as helping those who are engaging in the abandonment of subtler forms of suffering, then you will of course be helping to eliminate the suffering directly and indirectly of all sentient beings. So this is tremendously beneficial to do, and hence this practice of generosity is so important. And through engaging in it, you are accumulating virtue, which will lead to good rebirths for yourself in the future and good conditions in your future lives, and enable you to progress, continue progression on in the cultivation of minds of the Dharma. But it doesn't only, the practice of generosity doesn't only have these long-term benefits. It has immediate-term benefits in that through helping those in need, you develop good relationships with them. You develop harmonious relationships with all those that you encounter. And in this way, you achieve benefits in this life. And through helping others and knowing that you are making a positive difference in the life and the lives of others, you generate joy in your mind. So you have good relationships with others. You yourself are happier. And of course, you know that others too are generating joy in their own minds, because they know that they have someone who's supporting them, someone who cares for them, someone who is helping them with whatever difficulties they are experiencing. So in this way, this practice of generosity, it helps you in this life, it helps others in this life, and it brings about benefits in your future lives. So maybe then just to give an alternative translation for this verse, because you can see it doesn't quite match the explanation. So we could maybe have something like, having realized that possessions are transient and lack any essence, be generous in a proper manner towards the ordained Brahmins, the poor, and your teachers. And there's no better friend than the perfection of generosity. So just to say a bit more on this, no greater friend than gift, or there's no better friend than the perfection of generosity. This is because the practice of the perfection of generosity leads, when done with the appropriate motivation or the suitable motivation, it leads to the accumulation of causes that will lead to the ripening of the result of liberation and enlightenment. So therefore, this practice of generosity is supreme amongst all of one's friends.
Dene dewa ina da sosogi ane Dikwa yunga yusum yugani dikwa saigo maare sose kewa saigo ro ya purwa. En mishan le ya sebo kumbha ene mishan da kongro mala dine sin sose ge ene kisi kejo ya kwa saigo re. En mishan le ya kongro la mala ya ta en chik dine de mishan le dikwa saigo yo maare ya purwa. Yine ene sose ge dine ge mige chu tsurum sung je deba tam ge ene shan le ya roko ma jeba ene kayo la yo pandu go maare meni pandu go maare wa dine mi 타고들이 that so suge dine sam na la di yebe kable en chimba pa roba chebe ne mini kayo la yo kontu le kama se yung res jina kama se wa tang kontu kayo la yo so su ya ngone ga bu je yung res jina chimba di cho res ya sho res sa pa ndo ra she ni ga la pa ndo chimbo shu cha ka du ko du da dine gi en ne ha ta ne ha sam da na pa ndo chimbo en ma ho ba sam da na pa ndo chimbo en cha go res jina jimbe di ya ha res se di ro cho res sung go le gim zen di re
So I'll just read the alternative translation of the verse again. Having realized that possessions are transient and lack any essence, be generous in a proper manner towards the ordained, Brahmins, the poor, and your teachers. There's no better friend than the perfection of generosity. So the meaning, again, of this last line here is that if one engages in a variety of practices to cultivate the minds of, say, ethical conduct and patience, but doesn't engage in the practice of generosity, then this will mean that one's practice is far from complete. Because whilst it certainly is important to cultivate the minds of ethical conduct, like we heard last night, because this will ensure that we don't harm others, and rather that we engage in beneficial activities towards others. And likewise, the practice of patience. This will ensure that we're not getting angry with others and destroying our previously accumulated virtue, etc. So these are good practices to do. But if one chooses not to engage in the practice of generosity, then one's practice is not complete. And one's abundance of resources will just go to waste. So in other words, what one has in surplus to one's own needs, these will not be used. They will just go to waste. And the opportunity that one has to be of benefit to others who are in need, that opportunity will also be lost. And so therefore, you yourself may be surrounded by an abundance of resources, but those beings that you have a wish to be freed of suffering, that you have a wish to possibly lead them yourself to enlightenment, now that you have the resources and the opportunity to help them, if you don't take that opportunity is lost. So rather, if one generates a motivation of bodhicitta, generates this motivation to build a positive connection to others, so as to be able to lead them to full and complete enlightenment, and building this, and has the motivation to build this good connection with them through helping them in their times of difficulty, through helping them overcome both coarse suffering as well as subtle suffering, then one practices generosity in that manner. One creates the causes for one's own enlightenment. One brings happiness into the lives of others through alleviating their suffering. And therefore one is progressing towards one's actual goal of being of lasting benefit to others. So therefore this practice of generosity shouldn't be excluded because one is focusing on other practices. But this practice of generosity should be done as well as one's other practices.
Now, and some Karasungras and the Gomoluki, Jebo Chora, the name Yamlin Chevores, that Jeba and the Kurongi, the Lumbo, Jebo Kurong, Lumbo, Ajigi, Mangurua, the Zoine, and the Kurongi, the Niki, Kontulia, Lobdinche, and Jimbiki, the Nikon, and Kuno, Shane Pembe, Sambata, Janju Simju, Kune, Lanche, and Jimbatayaki, and Dusin Yamlinche, the Kontulia, Lobdinche, Yamlinche, Gurias, the Sungurwa.
So here at the Nagarjuna, it's furthermore saying to the king that you have this the opportunity to help others, in that you have an abundance of resources, and there are beings around you that you have contact with, and you can be of benefit to do so. And furthermore, through building up good and harmonious relationships with others, then you can guide them in how to cultivate virtue themselves and liberate and become liberated from suffering themselves. In the commentary on this verse now, we've looked at the practice of generosity in some detail. We've looked at the essence of the practice, we've looked at the objects, and we've looked at the motivation. So this advice that's given from Nagarjuna to the king, we should take this as if it was directed personally to us by Nagarjuna himself. And we should try and practice in accordance with this advice, to take it to heart, so to speak. And we should utilize the opportunity that we have to help others. And whatever resources we have in abundance, we should utilize to help others. So whether they are material resources or immaterial resources, such as giving our time to others, or physically helping others, or giving advice to others, etc. However we can be of benefit, we should do so. So here, this practice of generosity is about meditating on the benefits of generosity, or coming to know the benefits, then meditating on them to give rise to a sincere and powerful wish to be of benefit to others as much as one can and whenever one can. And then with such a motivation, then when the opportunity presents itself, we will help others in accordance with our needs. So it's not dependent on one being particularly wealthy or having so much money in the bank that one doesn't know what to do with it. But it's about wanting to help others whenever one can, and help others in accordance with one's abilities. And so if one generates this mind and then helps others in such a way, we ourselves will be happier in this life, because we'll know we're utilizing our life in a meaningful way. Our life has meaning, and we can see the impact we're having on others, and we'll see the change in relations we have with others. All that we meet, all those whom we meet, will have good relationships with them, will be harmonious with those around us. And then moreover, not only will there be these benefits in this life, but we know that when the time of death comes, that our resources that we haven't put to good use, those will be lost, and the opportunity to use them, that will be finished. But the virtue that we have accumulated in this life, these seeds of lasting happiness, they will go with us to our future lives. And then, dependent on the motivation that we've generated, these seeds can be very powerful and will lead to the ripening of good rebirths, to having abundant resources and all our needs met in our future lives, as well as enabling us to continue our progression to the attainment of liberation from suffering and the state of becoming a Buddha ourselves, the state where we can be of greatest benefit to others. So all of this comes about in dependence on our cultivation of the minds of such as generosity, and thereby being of greatest benefit to others whenever the opportunity presents itself.
Practice of generosity is usually presented in three different categories. So the first is giving material goods. So this would be money, food, medicine, and the like. The second would be the offering of dharma. So this can be done in a number of ways. So it can be, of course, through teaching the dharma. It can also be done in terms of helping others who are engaged in Dharma practice, helping them to engage in the Dharma practice without distraction. It can also be in terms of us giving advice to people that we have a good relationship with and seek advice from us. And then, of course, another way that we can all engage in is by being a good example to others, being an example of a practitioner of the Buddha's Dharma. So this is all ways that we can offer Dharma to others. Then the third way to the third type of generosity. The third type of offering of generosity is that of offering of fearlessness. So this is encompasses saving beings whose life are threatened. So this we don't always have opportunities to do. But if one passes a pool of water, take a look and see if there's an insect struggling, an insect experiencing the fear of death that's drowning for them what is like an ocean. So this is another way of practicing generosity, the generosity of fearlessness. And ideally, though, before we engage in an act of generosity, we should generate a motivation of bodhicitta, because then we will create the most powerful cause, and we will generate a tremendous amount of virtue that will lead to not only our benefit, but the benefit of others too. However, in reality, when we have an opportunity to help, and we do so, we don't usually then quickly generate a mind of bodhicitta beforehand. And that is unfortunately, that is a sign that our cultivation of the mind of bodhicitta, that is not yet uncontrived. It is something that we need to do much more of. If we were, on the other hand, walking around constantly with a mind of love present or a mind of compassion present, always wanting to help others and alleviate others from suffering, always wanting to bring lasting happiness to others, then if we practice generosity, it will be done with such a motivation. But until we get to that stage, it's imperative that we generate such a motivation consciously. And the best way to do this is each morning to cultivate the mind of bodhicitta in the way that has been described many times. And to do so day after day after day. Because then slowly, after a period of time, we will become more habituated with such a motivation. And then when we have the opportunity to practice generosity, joy will arise within us, because now we see this opportunity to practice generosity as an opportunity to relieve the suffering of others, to bring lasting happiness to others, to create causes that will be of benefit to all beings in the future through our eventual attainment of enlightenment. And such a thought will spontaneously arise in us, and that will be a sign of success in our cultivation of the mind of bodhicitta. So therefore, this practice of generosity is something that we should look out for, and whenever the opportunity comes, we should engage in it and be creative and help others in a broad way, to help them physically and help them in terms of how we speak to others, help others by giving our time to others, etc. So there are many ways that we can help others, and we should look for these opportunities and take them whenever they present themselves.
And then, because that's not the children, don't watch his temper, children just jamba says, so and the Chigorian, the Dagger's name, children song, and then some look on his tongue, song, good, and then children song, we pay a kind of young great, and then children, the other song, and the Tachimo can say, said, you call my share, Chigua.
Then, Tisco Crang, the Lolly Chickler, Chicky, because he also took his upper coat again. Then he took a chicken. So just bear with me a moment, please. So now we're going to start with the next verse, verse number 7. Okay, so we just... Okay, so just bear with me a sec. Kollegen, der da, die das... Ja, so gab die Erde. Just thinking for a moment. Okay. So now we come to verse 7. So here we were looking at before at the six recollections, and so now we come to the recollection that is that of ethical conduct. So here we'll look at what ethical conduct is and what mind one should generate that would be a mind of ethics, as well as the practice itself.
Nadi garis moros ni chigi tujim manya mimi ma mare maba da de sepada tembar tsuyes timi kyuda migyu sashin du yende kunji shidin le labar sons.
So can I just read the seventh verse? Keep your vows unbroken, undegraded, uncorrupted, and quite free of stain. Just as the earth, the basis for all that still or moves, on discipline, it said, is founded all that's goodness. So the first line is directed to, so the first word is you, and well, we have your, so this is directed by Nagarjuna to the king, of course. And so the king now is being advised to guard his vows in a manner that's unbroken, and, or keep his vows in a manner that's unbroken and undegraded.
Same yana taba tobi chidu yinsa da yana simje tamji dun sanju gobo tobi chidu yinsa bi kunwa dine sam dang go les jiza da simje tamji sanju gobo tobi chidu yinsa be sam kunwa ta je ne sujum sona ne jigo res ma do ne se digi tam nyan da yo ya da se digi ne jige ya bo ya sam ta je ne kunwa dine sam ta ne kun jigo ma dine kunu me ba chu go re so le
Then the my dharma. Okay. So keep your vows unbroken and undegraded. So these. So we have four terms here regarding keeping your vows. You have unbroken, undegraded, uncorrupted, and quite free of stain. So the first two, unbroken and undegraded. So here the king is being advised to protect his vows, to not let them degenerate, to not break his vows. And then the third term, uncorrupted. So then this is referring to his, the motivation that the king should cultivate for keep guarding his ethics. So his motivation should not just be about this life going well, but rather he should have a motivation in accordance with the Dharma, in particular motivation of wanting to achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. Or alternatively, at least to have a motivation of attaining liberation from samsara for himself. So this third term then, uncorrupted, is about the motivation that the king should cultivate, the motivation for guarding his ethical conduct. Then the fourth term here, quite free of stain. So then this refers to if the king has, so this is similar to the previous term in that it's about the motivation that the king should generate for the guarding of his ethics. So here he's being advised against merely having a motivation to have a good future rebirth. So it's guarding his ethical conduct so that merely in his future life he can be born as a god and a human. Such a motivation is too low. He should rather have a far greater motivation than that. So what motivation should the king be generating? So this would be the motivation whereby he's going to guard his ethical conduct so as to create the causes to free all sentient beings from suffering completely, and furthermore to take them beyond the state of liberation from psychic existence and lead all sentient beings to the state of full and complete enlightenment. And to be able to do that, the second part of the motivation is to generate the wish that I will attain enlightenment so that I can be, as a Buddha, be a skilled guide and thereby lead all sentient beings to the state of enlightenment themselves. So in other words, the motivation that the king should have is the motivation of bodhicitta. And with this motivation of bodhicitta, guard his ethical conduct.
Mm.
So let's look then at the third line. Just as the earth, the base for all that still or moves. So first of all, these terms still or moves, these can be are often expressed in other ways. So still would refer to the inanimate, or the sometimes we hear about the container, and then moves would be the animate or the contained. So to put it an easier way, then still would refer to inanimate objects such as mountains, houses, and this kind of thing, and that what moves would refer to sentient beings, so or the animate. So all of these arise from a basis, and the basis here is likened to the earth, because without the earth nothing will grow, etc. And the meaning of this analogy is that everything, whether it's still or moves, or animate or inanimate, or the container or the contained, it comes from this basis, which is ethical conduct. And the reason that ethical conduct is the basis of everything is because it's from this basis of ethical conduct that virtue is accumulated.
Then he gets So to guard this our ethical conduct, then we use a few minds are particularly important for the guarding of our ethical conduct. So firstly, we'll have mindfulness and introspection, as well as the mind of conscientiousness. So these three are particularly important. And the way they work together is that it's through introspection that we are aware of our motivation. So through introspection, we're analyzing our mind to see, what is my motivation? Do I have a wrong view dominance now? Do I have a motivation for harmful intent to, right now? And or do I have a motivation to respond to others in a harsh manner and speak in a harsh manner towards others? So the mind of introspection is analyzing what we're doing or saying, oh, the way I am speaking now is inappropriate. So this is the role of introspection. The mind of mindfulness then will recall our previous commitments or aspirations and say, this is not appropriate. I should not be speaking to others acting in this way. Rather, I should be relating to others in a way that's gentle, a way that brings about harmony, etc. So mindfulness will recall our virtuous objects, our intention that we had generated that morning, for example. And then the third mind, the mind of conscientiousness, this will help keep our mind on virtue. It will help prevent our mind from going to the side of non-virtue, the side that harms ourselves and others. So this is the role of the mind of conscientiousness. So through these three minds, we guard our ethical conduct. And guarding of ethical conduct is important for many reasons, but a further reason is that through establishing a stable foundation of ethical conduct, we can then progress in our practice to making the mind more stable through the cultivation of concentration. So these minds of mindfulness and introspection, as well as conscientiousness, these three are all utilized in the cultivation of concentration. So these same minds that are used in for guarding our ethics are also used in the cultivation of concentration. And then furthermore, once one has achieved concentration, these same minds, then especially mindfulness and introspection, are utilized in the practice of wisdom. So in this way, through guarding our ethical conduct, through the minds of mindfulness and introspection and conscientiousness, we then can progress with our practice to cultivating concentration, strengthening our practice of wisdom, and thereby progress to the attainment of the goals of liberation and enlightenment.
Jemba digi tene tubugo beje ditane tubugo dene dene enza de tsurim su ye kabla dene gi ten shi yin ba yo sum di ane ya ho chi ko tembu re ya ya le yo de ane ma ba na ni shi ne tu bia ina ta ane lam go me nan le la yung go re se chi ne dene gi nge ri dik ti ma bo chi gi re se ti ro wa da sa na shi re se di le do
When we engaging in guarding our ethical conduct, we utilize these three minds in the following way. So we utilize this mind of introspection to be aware of what we, how we're communicating to others, how we're behaving, or what our mental state is, what our motivation is, what minds are dominant. And then it's through this mind of introspection that we see if we are engaging with others with a mind of love and compassion, or if we have a mind of annoyance or pride, and we are engaging with others in such a way. So it's our mind of introspection that would be aware of our motivation and aware of the various minds that are present at any moment. And then this has its partner, its close friend of mindfulness. And mindfulness or memory, it's the same word in Tibetan. This would then recall what our intention is, what our motivation should be, and would remind us that by engaging in a certain manner, if we continue in this harmful manner, we will create negative karma, we will harm others, etc., and will then remind us of our virtuous motivation. And in this way, we'll bring our mind back to virtue. And then, in terms of conscientiousness, this keeps our mind together on the virtuous object. So it helps us stay with say a mind of love if this is the mind we're trying to have present. So conscientiousness serves as the antidote to a mind of distraction. So if our mind is getting distracted to a variety of things, it's conscientiousness that would bring us back and say, no, these aren't suitable objects to be thinking about. I shouldn't be, for example, complaining and thinking about this fault and that problem and all these things, and complaining about someone, oh, they did this, they did that. Rather, my mind should be in a virtuous direction and bring our mind back. So this then is the role of conscientiousness. And these three minds work together in terms of guarding our ethical conduct. And then, through guarding our ethical conduct, we start to develop familiarity or habituation with these three minds. So these minds of introspection, mindfulness, and conscientiousness, these start to become more powerful. And this is as we develop a habit with them. So they become more powerful. And then when we come to develop the mind of single-pointed concentration, we will do so independent on these three minds. So if one has the wish to develop single points of concentration, the way to do that is through the minds of conscientiousness, mindfulness, and introspection. And to develop these minds, to cultivate these minds so that they are powerful, one needs to guard one's ethical conduct. Because one guards one's ethical conduct through these same three minds. And therefore one develops strengthens these minds and develops a habituation to them. And then it becomes much easier to develop a mind of single-pointed concentration. And when one has done that, then one will achieve the various paths and eventually the grounds as well through the cultivation of wisdom. So this is the sequence. Through, first of all, guarding our ethical conduct well, we do so through the same three minds that are needed for the cultivation of concentration. And in this cultivation of concentration, that is needed for the cultivation of wisdom and the attainment and progression on the various paths and grounds.
Dinning Jimbata, Surim Soyake, Payendig, Samda, Dinig Payendiginza, Jimbata, Surim Soya Chevena, and Setile, Shalaya, Pando Chimbo, Ralea, Kibu, and Giva Chima in a Sosolia, and Jebu, Longjeta, Digiaya, and that Jigge, Sanjeta, Tarbata, Sanyo want to be Uchegore, Jesus Sanyo want to be Tarbores. Denigi, Dinada, Denigi Chimbi, Yamne Chialpe, Massi, Chike, Yahudu, and Big Dunye Chikawachi, Kiada, Kiji, and Matuki, Dusche, Denigi Tolia, and Chik Chandor Shadi, Dingle of Sentigida, Labjer Liari, Tididwa.
So today we've looked at, first of all, the practice of generosity, and we spoke there about a number of aspects. We looked at the essence, we looked at the objects, and we looked at the motivation for the practice of generosity. And then we came on to the practice of ethical conduct. So here, what one needs to think about is about the benefits of the practice of generosity and ethical conduct, and think about these again and again and again, so that strong awareness of them arises. So one needs to think about the benefits that will come through these practices in this life, benefits for oneself in that we will be happier, and benefits for others in that we are helping others through either not harming them by guarding our ethical conduct, and through helping them through generosity, or helping them through having good ethical conduct. And then furthermore, benefits will come in our future lives, in that good rebirths will follow, and that due to having cultivated a good motivation, a worthy motivation, a motivation of the wish for enlightenment or liberation, we will be accumulating the causes, the seeds, that will ripen in that result. So the result of enlightenment will be nearing and approaching us because of having generated this motivation and then engaged in these practices. So these then are the benefits of the practices of generosity and ethical conduct. And we should meditate on these repeatedly. And we should meditate on them following first the cultivation of the mind or bodhicitta. This motivation of all sentient beings want to be to experience only happiness and want to be freed from all experiences of difficulties and problems. And I myself will take the responsibility for freeing them. And I will do this because of the intimate relationship I have with all beings, that we have the relationship of parents and child established since beginning this time. And in these relationships, they showed me tremendous kindness, and now I need to repay this kindness. And therefore, by taking responsibility to free all beings from suffering and lead them to the state of enlightenment, we then generate the second aspect of the mind of bodhicitta, and that is, to be able to do so, I need to become a skilled guide myself, and therefore I need to become a Buddha. So in this way we generate the mind of bodhicitta, and this is something we should do every morning. And then after this, we can engage in the reflection on the benefits of the mind of the practices of generosity and ethical conduct. And then through doing that, we will generate a strong aspiration to engage in the various forms of the practice of generosity, to guard our ethics well, and thereby we will create causes for lasting happiness for ourselves and others. So then this afternoon we'll start with the next verse, and the next verse then is the beginning of the next major outline here, and that is on the six perfections. So before we break for lunch, so some questions.
This speaking of advice to people can be quite a curly question.
can you rephrase curly question for me, please?
Quite a difficult question, a difficult thing to know when you should give advice or who you should give advice to, and how to give advice. Kinala mentioned once before, use one's own wisdom.
Yes.
And there seems to be a period now that it's quite difficult to give advice to just people take offense. Is there any way around that?
Okay, so can I say something a bit more about on how we can benefit others through giving advice, because people can take offense quite easily. Yeah, so it's been mentioned before we should use our own wisdom and give advice to others, but how can we do so in a way that's beneficial and doesn't cause a response. Okay. Deni nume di kole kenengi natsola soso rikpayame soso sherabde petu tankare sungsong. Yini labse kyapye de kole natsol kaloptis mangwa o yang kyap namrokna.
Yee, da soso shen liya labse kyapdi susu kuno di tangone kole pen sembege jambale jambi sumu kune la Then, 거부를 지게
So it's a good question. So let's answer in two components. So first of all, your motivation. So this is important. If you have a good motivation, then virtue will follow, no matter what result comes. So first of all, generate the motivation of to be of benefit to others. And the best way to be of benefit to others is to lead them to enlightenment. So try and generate a truly beneficial motivation, a motivation of love, of bodhicitta. And then, so that's the one aspect. So it's about your motivation. And then in terms of the performance, so here one needs to be skillful. So maybe we can say that the two aspects then within the performance. One needs to be, we need to be skillful. And the second, we need to take the long view. So if we take an example that could be contentious, if you're with a friend at either a dinner party or at a bar, and you say to them, drinking alcohol is so bad, and these are all the faults that come from drinking alcohol, we know what reaction is likely to get. They're not suddenly going to say, you're right, I abstain, I feel such regret. So rather, you need to be skillful and take a long view. So first of all, and this, we're just going to talk about alcohol, but it relates to all situations. You need to have a good relationship with someone. You need to be, the Tibetan is your minds need to be close. So you really need a close relationship with someone. Otherwise, you're not going to get a good result. It's not going to go well. So if you have a good relationship with them, then you can immediately start giving advice. If you don't, you first need to form a relationship where they will want to hear your advice, where they'll want to hear your unsolicited advice. So that relationship needs to be formed. If that's not formed, then problems are likely to follow. And then once that relationship is formed, then again, keep the long view. So here this means you could talk to them indirectly. So say, oh, you heard the story about a person who their whole life they drank, not so much, but they drank regularly. And then when they're a bit older, they had quite some health concerns. And then they cut down their drinking, but it was a bit late. Rather, they regretted that they hadn't stopped when they were younger. And then you just say that, nothing directly to the person. They may hear something and take it as internalize it and personalize it, or they may not. But they're not likely to respond in a critical way. And then furthermore, if as the relationship develops and time passes, you can recount another story about someone who eventually stopped drinking. Again, they weren't excessively drinking, but it did cause problems. They'd be a bit drunk, they'd have problems at home, or hungover for work, etc. And now their life is much better. They have a better relationship with their loved ones. Their work is going better, etc. And again, it's nothing directly being said, but the person may well internalize it. And if they don't, well, that's okay. You've tried, and you've done so in a way that's non-confrontational. So here are really those two aspects of, one, having the relationship where they are open to unsolicited advice. Without that, it's not going to go well. And then secondly, having the long view, not expecting complete change immediately. But if some change comes, then that's success. And if some doesn't, well, you tried. But the main thing is you still kept a harmonious relationship there.
Thank you.
Okay. And after.
Just following up on that question, which is relevant to me at the moment, I'm getting a lot of unsolicited advice from people whose motivation I think is questionable.
Uh-huh.
And it's causing a lot of problems for me because I'm not able to respond in a way that is virtuous. My mother is incredibly angry and I don't like being told dogmatically what I need to do. I'm actually willing to understand what I'm doing in a particular way. So how do I deal with it? Because it's really causing me a lot of
That's good. So when receiving unsolicited advice, and especially where you doubt the sincerity of the motivation of the other person.
Sure.
Then how can one respond in a skillful manner and not get annoyed in such situations? I understand. Okay. Then
Soso ki di lega chaya di shenliya nyugi meba tanga, shenliya penpa roo shiya yinne, 你过去买进来的年糕要么说是的，拉人等等这个了哇。那刚进来，现在个老不觉得，那么啥，过些说是全部吃了，别嘛，剩下老不就是全部吃完是干嘛？你过些个炖蛋的了呀？啊，你讲这个，你开始都过些个那些的钱呢？你经营开销啥的，很多开销啥的，你也吃完吃，这里也吃完那些的，说是给军人级的刚刚就用过没办法，然后拉人等过些的年糕要买了哇。
So there are a few things to do here. So first of all, to recognize that by becoming annoyed or frustrated or angry in a situation, this is inappropriate and it's unsuitable. So that's the first thing to recognize, that it's not justifiable anger. This is something we don't, a mental state we don't want. So that's the first point. And then the second point is, or the second step rather, is to separate their motivation from the words. So their motivation is their problem. That's for them. This is something we can't see clearly and we have no influence over. So their motivation is their problem. So just listen to the words and listen to them as mere words. And think, and then just think about them, the mere words. And think about them in the sense of, so does this advice make sense? Is it good advice or not good advice? And if it's advice that will help me do my job better, or help me be of benefit to others, then adopt it. And if not, then put it aside. So it's really, first of all, like you've done, recognize that the anger isn't justified. And then secondly, to separate their motivation from their words. So then one is just thinking about mere words, this mere sound. And then you think about the meaning and accept it or not accept it. Okay?
Okay.
There'll be more time this afternoon. Thank you.